Okay, we have now our last panel concerning OpenSS and Navi Server. And before our meeting here, I sent a couple of mails around about what are the issues out there and what is the things you are missing most and what can help you in the future. What would you like to see in the system? And actually, I did the same thing also last year and this year again. And I think the first part also concerns a couple of points that we have addressed in the meantime, and we have just from these points went in the system. And in the next slide, I have some more points there, which were coming back here. And then also we have a panel here where we can discuss between active users, where I know that which I don't have in my reach normally to say openly, what would this help you for your work, and how could you, whatever, if you face some whatever kind of issues in terms of scalability or functionality or security or whatever, how can we improve this situation? I mean, from the first points we have here is the points from the last year, and actually we have not addressed all of them. I mean, it starts there with the first point about having for OpenSS different installation levels. It means you might have a development site, you might have a deployment site, and it would be nice to have some pre-installments that on the development side you have these things configured, and if you say I'm now deploying it, automatically all of the stuff disappears and you're on the other side. We have not done this. It was just a wish. But there was a interesting other point which we addressed and which we have now in a quite a good way, is the so-called security posture. I mean, it just looks at an OpenSS installation. What are your current settings? What kind of dangerous information you are providing to the outside world to access to it? And it just gives you a list. These points, you have said this and this and this and this, and these are dangerous, and there are recommendations what you should do in general to make a site more safe. And also, I think one very important point there is it checks what version of third-party libraries you are using. And this is mostly concerning things like JavaScript libraries. You have some, whatever, starting with Bootstrap and jQuery and you name it. I mean, there are a couple of packages there, and there are known issues with these libraries, and it checks. You have installed these libraries here. Here are the links to the vulnerabilities. And if you want to upgrade, click here, and you can decide afterwards, do you want to download the library or you want to use it over CDN? It is more or less there for, I think, between 10 and 20 different packages. It checks this. And this is when actually in the release of OpenSS 5.10.1, which was after our last meeting here. And also in the meantime, there was something new also added here concerning the database. I mean, I just did it for Postgres, but most of the installation used today Postgres. And for Postgres, the situation is even more complicated, because you have a Postgres client library and a server library. And these do not have to be the same versions. And there are vulnerability checks there and known problems posted by Postgres itself on the site. You have to find it. It's not so easy, and you have to figure out, I have now this version and what of the things apply for me. And this thing, well, this check now in the head version of OpenSS does it for you, and you get a list there. You should probably upgrade whatever your client or whatever, because these are the vulnerabilities, and here's the vulnerability reports for this. Therefore, this is something, but this is actually requiring the Navi Server 5, or actually it was necessary to extend the database interface to distinguish between version of the client library and version of the server library, and it was done in a way that if a channel DB interface let the database report the client version and the server version, and it just brings it back to a version number, which you can use afterwards for whatever checking on the website and passing the right passes there, getting it out. Therefore, you need Navi Server 5 to get this feature working, otherwise it's not shown in the postal scan side. Some other things we didn't do, but I know some users did it, something like better whatever password checking mechanisms, having some rules how your password should be checked, and having some JavaScript funky whatever stuff there. There are many libraries out there, but we didn't do anything. And the other thing is also the CSP handling. CSP stands for security
policies, content security.
Content security policies. And it means more or less, if you're using some pages, for example, which have it starts with simple things. I mean, something like also if you have an included JavaScript and the included JavaScript doesn't have a checksum, you're getting a warning there. This is insecure. And if you have there also, for example, an included CSS on the page, is also bad. I mean, the good thing is to should do things is to have a website, define the website link there also with a SSH code, with just a checksum, and then just allow the things they're using here. Or the question is a JavaScript client allowed to read some properties or not? And therefore, CSP is there, and we have the CSP reporting to a file, and the current admin has to look at this file and figure out in this file what's going on, is something here bad or whatever, and how to deal with this, and what was rejected and so on. And it would be nice to have a user interface. We don't have it for now. The first thing is not done, this is done, and more of this is done. Another thing we have didn't address there is the pull request coming request, and the long-term whatever issue is. We are still using CVS for OpenSS, and we have the CVS repository, and we have the GitHub repository. But for the OpenSS development, the core version where everything is coming from is still in CVS. And I think we have addressed this last time, and it is some kind of work of getting rid of CVS. And I would say that 50% of the work is documentation. Good documentation, how to release stuff there. I mean, Antonio has done many things on this to improve it afterwards, but the documentation part is something more. I mean, this means tagging rules and how to manage packages, but there are also, it's doable, but it's somewhere.
Yesterday you asked me why I do stuff on my own GitHub. One of the reasons is I don't want to put new stuff into CVS. I want to wait until we are on GitHub, so then it can be migrated.
But there's also another thing, for example, is the way how we generate packages. It's always something which might go into Max system. I mean, there's a so-called APM files for, it's a tar file containing the packages with dependencies and other things that are around there. And all of this package building is based on CVS tags and is producing things, and you can download afterwards these APM files from your web interface directly into your application, and this has to be redone and so on. Other things we didn't see much progress was also documentation side on the OpenSS side. On Navi Server side, I mean, many things happened there, but it was more or less eating our more resources than on the OpenSS side. Some of the new wishes this year was summarized here. And first thing is a centralized virus scanner for if somebody's uploading content, files, whatever. I mean, one has to check whether it might contain a virus. I mean, and if a client, if a professor loads down a file, you don't want to download the file afterwards. Therefore, and we have some kind of mechanisms there. built into this XWiki package, which is also a container package for other packages, but not in general OpenSS. There are places in OpenSS where this is not used. It is some kind of refactoring and removing things required, but I think it's useful to have this. I think it's also optional for ExoWiki. You can say, I want to have on every upload this testing. It has also bad sides. I mean, some of the virus checks are false positives. But anyway, I mean, it's optional and you have to think about whether you want to do it. And if you want to do it, it certainly has to go into the more central part in the ACS core. Another thing is, I've mentioned before, this vulnerability scans which are out there, but still people are using more JavaScript files than we are supporting in OpenSS in general, and some of them, and this data tables is a very nice package, having many features and having many versions which are not compatible at all, but anyhow. And it's not, let's say, a single JavaScript file, there are 20 flavors out of it. This combined with that, and this feature, and that feature. I mean, I think it's a question is the only way we can proceed there is if the users, if you, whatever, use JavaScript packages up to a certain level, I think it's really useful to put them into this mechanism of these posture checks. I mean, it's really painful to look at the various sites. Is my JavaScript library having some kind of vulnerabilities? And this was a report of a very knowledgeable user there, and they discovered that one of their sites, they have many OpenSS sites, has a vulnerability of data table, and then they got a database injection by this. I mean, today it's a pain in the ass. JavaScript libraries are not so stable or so secure as people used to think in the past, and therefore it's a way to improve on this type of thing. Another request was there, which I was expecting actually earlier, but anyhow, I mean, OpenSS has a quite a sophisticated mechanism of detecting potential resource limitations, and actually some of the things were also presented by Jim, just of the logs, whatever, is just on the Navi server side, but also on the OpenSS side, it just checks whether a certain request takes longer than a certain limit, and you can see these are fast requests, these are medium requests, and these are slow requests. And that means you should look into the slow requests in the medium-term future, and you want to have them put together on one place. And this works nice if you have one OpenSS installation with a single server, which is today, we would say 95% of the cases, the case you don't have a cluster. But if you have a cluster, and the single does it, this means you have many of the servers. And then you have to go to every single server there to collect the slow calls, and certainly it would be nicer to have it concentrated on one place. And there are various technical approaches how to achieve this. And I mean, I'm not sure how many people are using your cluster. I don't think nobody's using it here, but there are certainly options of improving this. I think we should look at this. And also, Oracle support is lagging behind. I mean, it is something which is true since there was a time when OpenSS was released. I mean, it was first just a Postgres, then in Oracle, then it was moved to Postgres, and then Postgres somehow faded away.
I know you left the questions at the end. I'm just wondering why this stuff, a lot of this stuff looks useful to all Navi server users. Why does it have to be made specific to OpenSS? Long calls monitoring would be tremendously useful. I don't use ACS.
Yeah, I mean the reason there is that in OpenSS there's a package which handles the monitoring. Mm-hmm. You have your own thread running in the background collecting data which is coming in, and it's not a Navi server package. It's OpenSS package.
Okay.
it could be made, of course, an Avizora package.
Yeah, I think we had some traces that track calls all the time.
Yeah. I mean,
At the Navisor.
Exactly, but it's a question of performance and setting limits, and the whole thing is also you can block certain things and whatever. It has many bells and whistles, and but you need a central place for this to look at, and you want to have it with more or less no performance impact. Because if your server is already slow, you don't want to make it even slower by doing some monitoring on this. Of course, and I mean the best thing is would be performance-wise to implement it in C, but it's actually not necessary to implement it in C, but it's the way how it's done. And
wasn't there like timing features for every included ADP file?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, there was, right?
But it is there, but you have to turn it on.
You have to turn it on and you have to be using ADP, right?
And actually, and the user sees it. Therefore, there's many timing stuff which you can improve and all.
Yeah.
And also for the times, we are also distinguishing spooling times, filter time, actual request times,
execution.
And other things. And the only thing you can really, you will check is just the inner part there of the thread specific times, and you have to filter this out. And there's no native call in Navisera for doing it. And it's not complicated, but it's five lines of code in different. But it should be more or less probably filtered out and making a Navisera module and getting this recording thing together. Okay, next point is something which I think is a very important point. Secrets management. I mean, people have database passwords. People have, for example, the cluster installation has a cluster join password. I mean, the clusters are defined in a way that you can start up with two nodes, and on the fly you can add new clusters to it, but you only allow clusters there which are have certain properties. You cannot rely on any kind of IP addresses, because on AWS you have always different IP addresses, therefore it's done via some kind of a cluster secret, and this cluster secret, if it's getting out of hand, you don't want this, and you don't want it have it in configuration files. Not the reason, it's not the reason that the configuration files are really insecure, but in audits, people look at what happens if somebody is taking over your whatever Docker instance, and in your Docker instance can read this file. It's like, okay, I've used some kind of file system permissions there. Well, what is if they're coming with the typically the server is not running as root, but as a non-privileged user. But if somebody managed to get to log in as this non-privileged user, whatever. I mean, it's a discussion you do not want to do with your auditors because they are not really willing to discuss this. And the message is, the keys should not be on the server at all. Never store a key on the server. And there are many ways of how you can get your keys, and I just listed here a few of these. And the point is there, it certainly makes sense to find ways how to get the keys afterwards out of various operating systems, specific keychains, for example, or from AWS Secrets Management or the Azure Key Vault and so on. And there should be a way of combining this and making it running in configuration files that they just get it on the fly and have to be authorized certainly from the server there. And it's not a perfect security either, my point of view, but it's now state of the art and better than what we have now. But you have to think about, we have to find a way to pass the different modules there, some kind of secrets in a good way inside Navisera. This is something which I think will address quite soon. And there also, for example, there are candidates for this secrets here. And it was starting out with the private key of your server certificates. And it doesn't matter whether the private key is a separate file or in the main certificate, both conventions are out there. if they are stored on the file, it's not good. I mean, you should go out there. And I have some ideas how to do this, and I don't think it's very complicated, but I guess it's 1 week of time, and also checking out the other various secrets manager out there, which are there. But it's just more or less the summary of what I got back from some of the users, and I'm sure that when we discuss about this, many of you will have some more opinions. And actually, it's now also a goal of our panelists to say where should we go on afterwards. And therefore, I would take the opportunity of having people which I do not have normally in reach and to come on the panel. And I think Jim is a very good candidate because he comes every 20 years to such a conference.
No, no, I don't know if you have that. I was switch off, sir. Very good. We have missed a group photo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Just to mind.
I'm one
yeah,
for first evening.
Yeah, took a group photo. Yeah,
let's
see.
Yeah, from the dinner
history. Yeah, but we are not.
I have one question to the past presentation. Yeah, yeah. On the wish list first page, you had the item about password management expiry. And we had before the topic about calendar DIA. And it's connected in my head. Would it be feasible to say if I set a password, then I know it will expire, let's say, in 5 months? That the system could generate an iCal entry or something, a calendar entry. This will be the date when your password expires. And if I want to plan a vacation for maybe 2 weeks vacation, and I see that's just the time when the next password expires, well, then I could click a link inside that entry and allow to change the password just in time.
It's
a clone job.
Yeah.
I think
they
have a
technology.
Yeah, I mean, OpenSS has this, you have an API and a command entry, and then you have it with a text, and you set it just from the state. I mean, having a reminder is not always the same as a calendar entry. I mean, if
yeah, that's the difference. Reminders are normal. Usually I get a reminder 2 weeks before it expires.
What we have there with Outwork is having a calendar entry. And you also can set in your calendar software, send me for this entry and afterwards
exactly.
Reminder, but you have to do it separately in your calendar.
That would be a luxury because I can say, okay, this will be a kindly unfortunate date of expiry, so I'll maybe set the reminder to maybe 3 weeks before so I can change it in time, but then I have the flexibility as a user to make sure I don't miss this date.
But you need something like the calendar, and OpenSS we have this personal calendar, group
yes.
Calendar, and you can decide maybe for all of the sysadmins to set the calendar, entering all of them, see this, and it's certainly...
I checked out OpenSS would be such a bundled system that it would be self-suggesting to combine these two aspects and say, okay, the password expires will be in calendar entry, and I can modify the calendar entry to tell me how long before it should actually pop up.
I mean, something like this is also in this post overview, it tells you, for example, when will this certificate expire? It's something quite similar. I mean,
probably.
Also, the short-term certificates from upstream are taking shorter and shorter periods, therefore it makes sense that you can say, maybe do it when I'm here and not waiting until you're gone. But normally the expiry and updates work from Let's Encrypt work flawlessly, and it just updates it. Flawlessly is always very hard to say because we had some problems there when Let's Encrypt dropped some features of certification validation, there's OCSP, something like that. Let the client check that the certificate is still okay, and some of the clients do it, some of the clients don't do it. But Let's Encrypt stopped supporting this request, which was actually, if I go to the site of SS, what is called SSL labs, mm-hmm. and you check your site, and it says if you don't have USB, then you get some minus points in your rating. Mm-hmm. And you get all ratings, you have to activate OCSP. Therefore, everybody, I've implemented OCSP for this point of view, and it just does requests and same thing and checks whatever. It is a couple of hundred lines of code in sync, but it's not overly complicated, but it's sufficiently complicated if you have no idea what's going on. And the point is that SAP stopped supporting it because there are so many certificate calls there that this OCSP request was killing the servers. And therefore, they did it in two ways. The first step was to send empty, it's called IA URLs. This is a URL where you check things, and it was empty, and it was a night string, and suddenly people updated their certificate in the night and got afterwards this night string of URL, and the code was not expecting a night string because the standard didn't say anything that there could be a night string, but it is always the case that you find cases. Anyhow, and the problem was that it was crashing, and the easy solution was to turn off OCSP in your configuration file, and everything was fine. But I'm just saying, if you say everything is getting automatically, you never know what happens in the world, and as installation depends more and more on external services, which might go wrong, and therefore,
we're going to do this, okay.
And also, please, Max, come up here, because you're also not often in our community, and you have, I think, many... And also maybe also Georg, I mean you've sent me so many good questions. And I mean also Georg is responsible for many of the new features in Navi Server 5. Because he's sending me questions, how can I do this the easiest way? And when I have to say there is no easy way to doing it, it's always for me some kind of a impulse to improve things. No, I think maybe just we start from your side. I mean, what is the thing you would, you have seen many things that happens in the community, and what is your impression, and how, which way should we move there? I mean, at least from the Navi Server point of view. And, yeah, I mean, we don't have really OpenSSS users here, but I ask you afterwards, Antonio.
Well, yeah, we have OpenSSS.
Yeah, it's... I mean, on the one hand, the discussion you were just talking about OpenACS and clustering, it kind of occurs to me, what are sort of features and things that we use that weren't open source that could be, that might be helpful in that domain, because I'm always interested in sort of, multi-tier cluster-based environments that are sort of cache coherent. All those kinds of problems are interesting, which is sort of one domain that may or may not be interesting because that reached the code for a long time. But the thing that really struck me about all of this was, one, how much it's still being used, which I didn't really realize. I didn't really know a lot about that. But two, what could be done with the core server, or maybe sort of the configuration therein, the packaging therein, that could enable it to run more seamlessly in the environments where so many of the engineers are spending their time now. And again, this is, so when you think about Amazon Web Services, for the moment, put aside the fact that it is just, obscenely expensive and, consumes resources like crazy. Just ignore that for a moment. But when I was invited to come here, I hadn't looked at any of this in a long time, and I was surprised at how, I couldn't just spin up an EC2 instance and start messing around with Navi Server again. I had to get an instance, set it up for development, download the code, compile it, get TDOM, do all these kinds of things. And I was thinking about what can we do not to improve the scalability or the security, because all those things are very well, from what I'm hearing, all those things are very well sorted. But what can we do to create conditions where we can introduce it to people in a much more chunky, bit by bit way? How do I just go on with my Amazon credentials that I already have and say, let me just try this stuff out? All the way to the point where you can almost think of some of the functionality that we're able to do in TCL, kind of
as part of their application environment where you're just running functions and not actually even a server. There's this entire rich environment over there, and we're not really in there. People are doing it on their own, but we're not in there, I don't think. So that's the thing that's very interesting to me about how to make this work.
I mean, is Docker for you one possible? Is Docker for you one possible way to this? I mean, we have, I think, various distributions based on Docker from Mavis server and VCS and various instances and configuration. I mean, the thing which I'm doing, there's TDOM included, and you want to have the database client there, and you want to have the database client in the server in there. And, I mean, you get all of these ingredients more or less by click.
Clicking, go.
If you have something like Portainer, it's really very easy to spin things up and to restart it and really run it. I mean, what do you have other in mind? The things going beyond Docker. I mean, I know that other container managers out there, and certainly we can improve on
well,
this.
Well, I mean, I'm just sort of, I'm always sort of in the back of my mind, I'm thinking of all the trouble we have with, you know, I have several dozen people working on AOL Server at any given time. I mean, not on the core, but using it as an application development environment, and the development environment versus the staging environment versus the production environment is always quite a struggle. And it was always difficult. You're always afraid of breaking things, you know, sort of the way in which the system was initialized. I mean, I mentioned this in my short talk yesterday. Some of those original design patterns of being able to modify the TCL state on the fly, that seemed cool at the time. But it had a big impact on our development environment and the maintainability and the difficulty of the AOL hosting team to host these things. I mean, again, this was hundreds of machines across multiple sites and stuff, but so it was a little bit more complicated. But that kind of, those sort of original constraints have always been in the back of my mind. What could be done to radically simplify the configuration and the development environment? Yeah.
I'm doing, it's my experience with Navi Server. I'm not doing OpenNet. So I have a bunch of Navi Server containers, Docker containers. My configuration script, I think I've sent you, right? I'm using a lot of variables. Basically, I have a little script. I'm saying, okay, I need a new client, for example. I'm starting up a new client. I just give it a name. It's filling up this configuration for that server and firing up a new instance.
Okay. Yeah.
So, instance. The problem is, like, you're talking about publishing these things. Like, okay, there is no official Docker container for Tickle. No. It's easily done. It's possible. After that, you create official Docker container for Navi Server, because because I'm not OpenAX user, and I didn't see on the forum, in the OpenAX forum, there is a Docker container for Navi Server from Gusto. So I did mine. Yeah, so if I, because I was using only Docker Hub, and instead like looking for Navi Server in Docker Hub, couldn't find something.
Right.
Yeah, I've created mine. So we can create this one, because Navi Server is really good for microservices. Like, it's excellent. Just create Navi Server, put, for example, NATS library in front, so you can communicate via message queue, do some calculation, plug, for example, TPM manager to download packages, mount a folder for like libraries, and you have a complete ecosystem for microservices, Tickle.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, you can use Tickle for web applications, web services, microservices, and people. Tickle is just scripting languages,
right.
And it's a joke. It's not. But it's missing some.
Your last few years of school, you wake up, have a cup of coffee. What's gonna have you interested and what's gonna make it easy for you to play around with this stuff? You know, how do we grow awareness of this? Because it's, you know, it's like solving the
coffee in the morning problem. Oh, this is interesting. How does this work? You know? And how do you make that easy? Actually, I was looking at a lot of the old documentation, and even just scrubbing the documentation to make it up to date on, like, OpenACS, it talks about, like, oh, it's used at AOL. Well, you know, MapQuest doesn't exist anymore. They're either just going by and doing a scrub there might make a big difference. But
maybe we should hide this from OpenACS.
Sometimes it's nice to read, and I mean, it's also good to have a nice path, at least. I mean, but if you have drop everything which is somewhat outdated, you have the feeling you are deleting a part of history.
Yeah. but don't delete it.
What about, like, archive or something? Yeah. Like in Gmail, don't delete archive. Where is the archive? It's in the trash.
I mean, yeah, I was here for some more. I mean, architecture, there's always some ideas that I've had, but let me hear some other folks.
What was talked about with locking, centralized locking, it sprang to my mind that, we have a well-established specialist community of huge installation, OpenACS. So there are specialists and they do their stuff and they know everything. We have the server itself, which has no other wireless adoption or very, very little, and there is little in between. So, and Gustav has made this year an incredible effort to put all the documentation on top.
Yeah.
So we have a good starting point, but
better. Better.
It's excellent. It's excellent. Because it's accurate. Yeah?
Yeah.
There are two things. One, what sprung to my mind is, for example, we could do logging to a database and then OpenACS could read from them. So maybe on the server side, we could provide more services which can be used by OpenACS, which would then not have to deal so much with system operation, and which on the other side would benefit normal users to also get the work done, which do not use OpenACS.
I think logging should be changed a little. Like for example, I'm talking about C# right now. We have a package in log. So after that, we have a target. Imagine the server is so busy there is some problems and you need to log something. You sending to log, and basically you're logging on the same machine. But instead, what it should be done, you send a message somewhere else to login server, which is not busy right now, and this login server will log this information. Mm-hmm. Because logging is writing to the disk, how it's done right now.
Isn't there no access log?
No, access log. Let me take to say that.
What?
Well, one thing is, I mean,
I
implemented some years ago asynchronous logging. That means
yes.
It writes to a queue, and whenever it can be written to the disk, it's written. That means it's not slowing things down.
Access logging, or server
all of logs.
No,
there's a general infrastructure, write the log file.
I'm using it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you're saying, when the server is ready, like, free. But what happened if server never free?
I mean, the disk is free. I mean,
yeah.
It's not the question if the server is idle, but can I write, is a disk writable? That's more of the question.
Yeah.
And this is normally not a big issue. But this is just one part of it. I mean, we have a Navi server, a syslog module. I mean, you can send it to a different server via syslog. I know nobody who's using this.
Is there still an NSN log module? There used to be a module where instead of access logging the disk, it would do a network log and multiplex across multiple machines.
I mean, there's an NS log, but the NS log is going. It was previously writing packages, but it has
they have
multiple threads. I mean, if you simply have multiple threads and you write to the disk, you have a picture there of the lines.
No, it's buffered, right? It's buffered.
Therefore, there's a queue actually, and it just checks is an asynchronous write to the disk.
Yeah.
And this asynchronous write to the disk just writes the full integer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just or is having currently in some kind of
blocks. So when I see like this log was, this message was logged twice or something, three times in the logs of Navi server, what does it mean?
I mean, the question is if you use Navi server 5, if you use it, you will find the entry, the last entry was repeated 20 times, whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, the point is that you have many threads, what happens if every thread writes the same entry? Therefore, it looks for you as the same entry, but you see there in front of it from which thread was it coming. For some users, it's very interesting to see how many single lines you have to see, and other people find this very annoying. Therefore, it's the question is, it's not so easy to make it perfect for every user. Yeah.
I think we talked about this. There's a basic design pattern in the OL server, which was like, it needed to be, it didn't make, we weren't trying to be computationally efficient, we were trying to be concurrent, and we were trying to collect as much statistics as possible, because the understanding was that if, you know, there was a computational bottleneck, we could solve that. If there was a design bottleneck with like concurrency that was getting out of whack because databases were slow and stuff, that was the problem that we always wanted to be monitoring. So, and this is why the AOL server from the beginning would collect a lot more statistics a lot of people might not have been able or might not need to use, but we were always using them. I mean, at the individual lock level, at the individual ADP, I mean, each ADP had a timing mechanism, and you know, the time system call is not even a system call a lot of times nowadays. It's just it's a read from shared memory. It's very fast and stuff. And so we were very.
I've also implemented it faster than it was before. I mean, it's used so often that it's really a pattern which can be. But we have this so-called system lock, or something called error lock, where you write everything.
Yeah.
But then we have access lock. But access lock for every server, actually,
yeah.
Every virtual server. And then we have the HTTP client lock. For every, you can say, for if you're sending from this virtual server here, a client request here and the other one there, you have these other files. And then you have more or less also SMTP login file. If you send mails out there, you also want to have statistics, how long they were taking, how many of them were rejected, and what's going on with this. I mean, we have many log files, not only one.
Access lock.
But
afterwards, we have many different entries there, and you have to manage them in syslog as well. Then you have syslog is even less convenient for a user, because then he sees everything merged together.
Yeah.
We have situations where we write, 5,000 entries per second to syslog files, and it's really some kind of a large event stream which is going out there. And sometimes I think that this is not so bad for this.
Because today we have log structured file systems and solid state disks. I mean, you know, 30 years ago we had spinning disk drives, and we had the fast file system, which wasn't a log-based system. It was much, much slower. And still, it didn't matter. The logs were critical. Even if it was too slow, we would just buy more computers. But, yes, you know.
Okay. The other point for me was I want to have Navi server as a package on the operating system,
yeah.
So you can just install it. I think that would be a feature to get it accessible to much more users. And it needs not be in the start compliant with the operating system. That's manageable in all operating systems, I know, but that would be a feature which would kind of match this coffee.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about what was all the complexity around code signing and all on the Mac. Imagine the Mac. So you can imagine like you double click it, it pops up, and then it says, enter a username and password who's an administrator so that you can listen on port 80.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, like you get end up with little things like that that could trip people up, you know. So that you can, it's the question is like you can imagine packaging it all, but when it starts up, what port is it on, what are they looking at, what do they see, and then all that stuff would make all the difference. Welcome to Navi server, now what do you do?
But the point is
that there's some kind of roadblocks.
Roadblocks.
I mean, once we actually Hector did it from our team. He's also a Debian maintainer. I mean, if you get stuff into Debian, you have it in Ubuntu, you have it on many other places. It's a right place to start off.
Yeah, right.
And we submitted the package and it was rejected.
Why was it rejected?
It was rejected because of copyright reasons. The copyright which was there is a mixture between AOL license, Mozilla license, and also GPL. And they said, no, this is not compatible, you can't do this. And at the same time, we moved their SSL integration into the server. And SSL has its own, up to 1 point something, had its own license, which also were not compatible, but they wanted to distribute the system. And therefore, they rejected it from all sides. And the reason, the way out there was more or less going more or less to the lawyers and figuring out what's the right way is, and the right way is to go to Mozilla 1.2. You can, nobody, no user is kicked out of the system. They can use it with GPL compliant. It is, you do not have to hide the code. You can, you have everything included in one license, but you have to get it out. And it also needs a new major number in order to have a chance to be accepted in the future as well, to say it's really a new piece. It's not the same thing we rejected before, it's now a new piece to be evaluated. Therefore, it's not so complex, it's not so easy sometimes. It's not a question of work. It's sometimes
how long ago is this? How long ago is this?
3 years? 4 years?
Huh?
3 or 4 years?
Really?
Yeah, but it's not necessary to get into the repository of the of Debian or of the respective operating system. But you have to have compatible packages. There are several products out there, or high level for CF Engine does it, for example. And I think to have a repository for Debian, Ubuntu, Alpine packages would be an advantage.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but also, Docker is the same thing at the end of the race.
Mm. I would propose that we do, yeah. I would say, last word.
Yeah. Maybe also something from the OpenSS point of view. I mean, just Antonio, what's on your wish list?
I still do a group photo with the people which are left.
Nothing specific, but in general, try to move. We were discussing why is it monitoring part of OpenSS? I could add. In some respect, one could argue why is HTTP client part of NaviServer and is not in Tickle. There is, in my opinion, the HTTP library from Tickle has a couple of caveats, and that is one of the reasons why we got our own implementation into NaviServer. There is also a deeper integration with the channels, data structures and stuff, so there are reasons why it is like this. But in general, try to move everything closer to where it is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So that more people can use it. For instance, John could use some NaviServer stuff. He doesn't use OpenSS. Tickle people could use stuff that now it's NaviServer stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, in NaviServer years ago is loadable into TCL shell. You can say load NS, you can say load libns.so and you can get a whole bunch of NaviServer commands.
This would be actually very cool.
There was a package out there from, what's the name? I mean, he did it and it disappeared afterwards. I have forgotten the name. It was something like 10 years ago or 15 years ago who did this package, and it's just...
I did this years ago. I refactored
it. But maybe just making the thing. I mean, the point is also with configuration files and other things. I mean, the question is, if it's all you want to have is more or less the same command there. I mean, everything which is more or less, all of the HTTP client side, for example, is using exactly the same low-level implementation, which is non-blocking at all, for all of the system. It's just reusing the receiving and highly tuned receiving part for sending as well. It's just web interaction. And also, if one goes to HTTP3, it's the right way to do it. And actually, I do not want to mess around in the Tickle world. Now you have to expect that this variant won't work anymore. Therefore, I mean, actually, when I came to the NaviServer project, first thing was, why we are not using their normal Tickle threads? Why is the Tickle threads differently? And why is, for example, why do we have our own thread start command, for example. And
it predated Tickle threads.
Yeah, it predated, and I did some effort to do this way, but it was at the end very painful to go to the details why things is not working.
Yeah.
And I think people are overestimating the benefits you get if one is using everything from one place.
I just want to add one thing that ties two things you mentioned. So GitHub, and then maybe things being more separated, like logging. Because one of the things that it's very easy for us to say, I want. But by making packages smaller, less dependent on other things, and moving to GitHub, you invite more collaboration. So I've now, for a decade, all the programmers I hire, I make it very clear that all their work is going to be through GitHub and will GPL licensed. And if you're not okay with that, don't work for me. Nothing you do will be closed source. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to, for example, do a log analysis from Navi server, I would inform my sysadmin, anything you do that improves this, please contribute it through GitHub so it gets improved. Because it also motivates you to keep improving the product. And we get the payoff also that when we improve it, now it's used by many people, so if there are bugs, those get caught. And I'm always surprised with the coffee app, just GitHub submissions just come in from people who know no Tickle. And they learn Tickle, they do a patch, they find a bug, they send it in, they fix the bug. I don't want to just be, we want you to do this, we want you to do this. By breaking it out, then you're helping us help you too.
Yeah. I mean, everything we have is on GitHub. I mean, OpenSS is on GitHub completely. And Microsoft is completely on GitHub.
We just haven't talked about open licenses at all. And that's a big plus of this whole thing.
Everything is there.
And
I think also Deep Recording knows that I would be happy if we have everything on GitHub up to date. From all of Digital Core, because also like this pull requesting and giving commands on the, it's just everybody knows how it works and everybody is able to contribute there. And if you say, okay, for a fossil you need whatever 50 accounts and then you can anyhow do something, and but the policies to do it this way and make your own branch.
I'm not in any way pushing you on that.
The point is that I let everybody do it the best way they want it. I'm not really religious on anything.
Yes.
But I think I agree fully with you that GitHub is really very powerful to do it. But we have already, if you have the impression that we are still using CVS only, we put it there, also it is synced every day with GitHub. And we get also pull requests from OpenSS from GitHub into OpenSS. It's not really so nicely integrated as we have it on the side, but this works. And therefore,
I was just trying and combine things, because it also combines up with Jim's point of getting other people. I disagree a bit with your point that spinning up something on the Amazon cloud to try out Tickle. In my experience, it's quite the opposite. It's that there is the code there, they want to do something, they learn enough Tickle to make a few lines of change, and then they submit it on GitHub, and that's how people tend to learn about Tickle or whatever we're doing, by having to only spend an hour modifying something that already exists rather than building from scratch. That's how I've been able to get dozens now of Tickle programmers.
That argues for something a really easy way, which we seem to already have, to get it on my desktop and start playing with it.
Not just that, a really easy way to make a small change or a small improvement.
Yeah, okay.
But I think the point is that people want to make sexy things. And sexy things today is whatever,
cloud,
large language model stuff. And if you get something more or less out of the box and you can make your own modification to it and your own variants, I think it's a big plus. You are addressing people by this. And also I think Antonio helped there a lot with his integration there. And we have to make it easier to use, probably, and maybe we can also package it up in a Docker repository or whatever, just to get everything together, pre-packaged in a way that people can play with this. And also one of the reasons why the Docker was not to ease the world for everybody, but also for me, to be able to say, I want to run this with Navi Server version 1, 2, and 3, and compile this afterwards with Tickle 9 or with Tickle 8.6. I mean, for me, just to switch more or less a directory there and have the same configuration, and it works there with all of the version out of the box without having me to be concerned about port numbers and other conflicts I have to deal with, is perfect for this. I mean, I'm a selfish person. I wrote this container stuff to make life for me easier. And sometimes it helps all of others. But okay, I think we're concluding here more or less. And I think we have at least two tasks still.
Yeah, we have some of them. We first have to thank great Antonio who did it.